Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Hey, we're back. Episode number two. MLS has kicked off. I'm getting CONCACAF Champions League fever myself. How about you, Greg?
I definitely am after the clean sweep last night for MLS sides.
Yeah, what a lot of drama and interest there. I was particularly pleased with the shots of Michael Bradley jawing with Andre Pierre Gignac during that Tigres game. The bear of a French striker who's really good. They had some kind of disagreement.
I would not want to get into a war of words with Michael Bradley just for the payoff that could be coming at your ankles later on in the series.
You think Bradley will make him pay?
He's capable. He just is such an intense guy. Like, that's not the guy I would want to piss off.
Yeah. I wonder if I get the sense that he's like softened in his age a little bit. He's not quite the Jaguar he was as a young buck, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Well, so we got that we can get into, and I'd like to start by talking about Andrew Carleton, who has fallen off out of the headlines a little bit. But
he's your favorite player at the moment, I feel like.
I feel like there's no superlative too out there for him at this point. Should I defend that position to get us started, or?
Let's do it. Let's hear your sort of the details of your crush on Andrew Carleton.
Well, you know, he played very well in Atlanta's last game of preseason, and I went ballistic and made like 30 GIFs of his performance and posted them to Twitter. And then he didn't play against Houston, and I think in the season opener, I think there are good reasons for that. But what has me so excited about him, and particularly that performance in preseason and the performance he gave against Paraguay in the U-17 World Cup, is that he really looks like a game-changing playmaker to me. I realize that in neither of those cases was he playing first-tier competition, but he's so he seems like he's able to buy himself space in the midfield. You know, his vision is really good. He's clean on the half turn. He's quick with his distribution to the flanks, and then he you know, the thing that's most exciting is he just plays passes that I don't think anybody else in – you don't see anybody else in the pool. I'm talking about the whole pool playing, like outside of the boot, 40-yard passes on the ground, across the field, or, you know, like a no-look wall pass to a fullback that's like streaking in from the flank. I realize that the competition hasn't been real competition yet, but I gotta go with what my eyes see, and what my eyes see is, and my heart, I guess I'll have to admit my heart sees it too, is a guy who could you know, if he gets minutes and he starts to get acclimated to MLS, who could really be, you know, right up there in the conversation with Pulisic and McKinney and you know, Matt Miazga, and except that he's a playmaker, which I don't think any of those guys is in a pure sense. And I don't think, you know, outside of Benny Failhaber, I don't know that we have anybody in the player pool, and Failhaber, you know, he's pretty much fallen out of favor, who's like that. So I'm doubling down. I'm saying it's going to be easy at the end of the year, after he puts up like 5 goals and 10 assists this season, to say, yeah, Andrew Carleton's the next big thing. I'm starting now. I'm saying it before he does that, because I like to live on the edge.
I feel like I've been on that edge too many times and just had my heart broken over and over again with, you know, the U.S. players that you think are going to finally cross that barrier for us, and then it just doesn't happen. The attacking playmaker spot in particular is, I feel like, the hardest one to break through in. It's such like a luxury position where to beat the threshold that you have to be able to play at to even have that position exist in your team is so high that I'm going to be very cautious about who I sort of invest my hopes in for that. I would love if he does it. It would be amazing. But it's so early in the game for this. I think it's almost impossible to watch a 17-year-old who hasn't played in a real competitive match. I'm not going to count the U-17 World Cup because I don't think that, you know, is there a super high correlation between guys who do really well in the U-17 World Cup than to rise to superstardom in the professional ranks? I don't think anyone can really make that sure of a projection, just because if they could, you wouldn't have these busts. There wouldn't be all these busts of players who don't make it.
Let me make a point about that. So yes, I generally speaking, I agree. How can you draw correlations from a U-17 performance? But it's not just that he like scored goals. You know, I would draw a distinction between Tim Weah and Andrew Carleton. Tim Weah had a hat trick in that Paraguay game, and one of his goals was like a total golazo from the left wing, where he just came in and like just hit a screamer into the top right corner. The other two were tap-ins. More power to him. We need strikers who can score tap-ins. I'm still not that impressed with Tim Weah, even after he made a debut with PSG. I mean, that's a big vote of confidence, so maybe I'm wavering a little bit in my skepticism. But I didn't see Weah doing anything in those U-17 games to influence the match and create chances for others. Carleton created every chance in that game. Carleton was like, he was on the ball from box to box, making things happen, like creating space, opening stuff up. Like it's just a different kind of performance than like, you know, some big 17-year-old striker who goes in and, you know, puts up like six goals just because they're bigger and faster than everybody else. It was like, it was real. He was doing real soccer stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm with you on that too. And that's great to see. Like that's the box he has to check to even be considered, like for that to even be a possibility of him being a game-changing number 10 or just an attacking player in general at the next level. But, you know, we've talked about this. If the competition matters even for those boxes, though. So the windows that he's going to have against a U-17 team are going to be bigger than he's going to have against a team of grown men. Like it's just going to be that much tougher. So then it just becomes it's just not known. We just don't know for sure if he can pull that same stuff off against a team that closes those windows a little faster, that might get to him a little bit sooner. So it's still just a wait and see. And the fact that even with Barco going down injured, Carleton definitely not the first player for Tata to come in and replace him in the starting lineup. It's just an indication that he, you know, if he were that player, I feel like he'd already be that player. Does that? Mm-hmm. I mean, I might be a little bit too harsh with that, but if he were going to be the next if he's going to be the next best or the best playmaker in U.S. history, then
yeah, that's where I'm going with this. Yeah, he would already be that. Okay,
I mean, at least he'd already hit his ceiling, but if your ceiling's that high, I feel like you'd already be a little closer to it than he is right now, which is fine. And he could still be a very good player. It's just we're real early in the process.
Yeah. All right. Cold water. I need a little cold water every now and then. I'm curious, who were your biggest disappointments in the past when you failed to guard your heart with regard to an American attacker?
I think one of the first heartbreaks that a lot of us had was Freddie Adu. And you know, we were kids with Freddie Adu, kind of growing up at the same time he was. But you watch that and you say, you start to sort of figure out that everyone's probably going to bust out. Like almost everybody that you hear of at 15 or 16 or 17, who's going to be the next best thing, is going to end up, you know, crashing out. Juan Agudelo still, you know, was was such a breath of fresh air after the 2010 World Cup. He scores in his debut for the U.S. national team. He looked the part against an Argentina in a friendly, and you're like, this guy is it. Like, we finally got our 18-year-old superstar. And then it just doesn't materialize. And it's not like Juan Agudelo's a bad player, but to project any kind of superstardom is going to be – you're probably going to be wrong. You know, you asked me if I think Josh Sargent's going to be – what he's going to do with Bremen, and I think he'll probably – you know, any individual player, like, he'll probably crash out. I hope he doesn't, but, you know, every Bundesliga has an 18-year-old Wunderkind on contract. And, you know, it's not like next year we're going to see every team starting a 19-year-old striker. Like, it just doesn't happen. The only thing that's special about Josh Sargent in this sense is that he's an American, so we're paying really close attention to him. We don't even know the names of the other 19-year-old prospects in the Bundesliga who might want, because they're not American. We just don't care, and there's a reason we don't care about them. Like, they probably won't amount to much. A couple of them will, but it's a numbers game, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we talked about this a little bit. We did something of a dive into a bunch of names of players who were on pro contracts as teenagers, and there have been, in fairness, a lot of those. And like you say, most of them didn't pan out. So the real question is, you know, how many of them became meaningful parts of their team as teenagers, and whether that's like coming off the bench for, you know, 20 or 30 minutes every other game, or being a nailed on starter. And, you know, when you talk about it that way, then there are a lot fewer, and the names are a lot more recognizable. The names that come quickly to mind are, you know, Agudelo, like you said, didn't pan out as a superstar. He's still a solid professional striker and an occasional men's national team call-up. Landon Donovan, DeMarcus Beasley. Let's see, who else do we have? I mean, Aaron Johansson, Michael Bradley, Bobby Wood, John Brooks, Jones. They all got regular minutes as teenagers. Not when they were 17, though.
I think we should tend to focus on the ones who, I mean, since we're talking about whether or not it's the American system that can kind of produce these kinds of players. I mean, it's obviously Jermaine Jones and Fabian, and those guys in Brooks, they would have been coming up in a system that was geared to get 17, 18-year-olds professional minutes. So I think it's a little more telling when players who came through the U.S. system are doing. So I think that is a good point in Carlton's favor. But I think you put it best when you said that really what we're looking at is sort of savior by committee. Like, we can't pin our hopes on any one of these players, but the fact that now it seems like there are more teenagers in the first team of professional teams now than there have been since I've been following soccer, so for the last 25 years.
Yeah. What do you think are the chances Carlton gets, let's say, 500 minutes this season?
Oh, man. Their opening game was so hard to tell. It's just really difficult to tell right now. We'll need three or four games before there's any sense of whether he's going to be first off the bench, second off the bench in a competitive game. I mean, they got blown out of the water so quickly that it was almost like an exhibition for the last 60 minutes. So I think I don't even want to try to speculate. That's the whole thing that I try to do less of is take those kinds of guesses and just say, we're going to have to wait for Tata to sort of show more of his hand with respect to Carlton. Right. I was hoping, just like you, that he was going to start and just control the entire game and just be this, playing well beyond his years. So really disappointing that he didn't get into the match. But, that's just something you just keep the guys on your radar the way you do such a good job of doing with all these teenagers out.
Yeah, well, I guess the fact that he didn't start was mildly disappointing to me, but also not a huge surprise. Then the fact that he didn't get on the pitch after they went down, would they go down like 4-0 by the 30th minute? Something insane like that. And then it doesn't make any sense to throw him into like a train wreck like that, I don't think. especially since the problems Atlanta had were didn't have a ton to do with their attack. Their attack, it was their defense and defensive midfield. Keep watching me when Bob still keep real and fame. Dance with my dogs in the nighttime. Ooh, 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 ooh. In the kitchen, wrist twisted like a stir fry. So Carlton not playing was a disappointment, at least on some level. I mean, we don't have to just talk about young players. What did you take from the opening weekend of MLS? Did you get to watch much soccer?
Yeah, I got to be kind of in and out of the different games thanks to MLS Live.
Man, that is a great service.
And it's last throws. I don't think it just exists until I think ESPN takes over. Is that right? But for the last weekend, it was great, so I could just kind of have games on the entire day.
Yeah,
I would say, you know, with a few exceptions, I'd say the quality of play. I feel like we're already seeing a higher standard of play, and I think, you know, that makes sense. There's more. MLS keeps adding more money into their wages. Their pipeline has improved, whether that's players coming in from Latin and South America, or whether that's their own kids that they've developed, you know, sort of more locally. Like, it's just better. The youth are better than what I think they used to be. So the overall higher standard play means that when kids do break in, it means more. Like, it's not just a homegrown kid that you're playing because you have to have that contract to keep yourself under the cap. Like, you have enough money now where if your homegrown kid isn't cutting it, you're going to buy somewhere else. But so you see some of these kids who are doing it, and that really stands out to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I thought, I don't know if it's because I'm paying a lot more attention now, but I thought opening weekend was really fun. A lot of sort of intriguing things about games. I mean, there was hardly a game that didn't have some interest for me, whether it be a young player or, like, you know, LAFC is kind of fascinating to me because Carlos Vela is a player I've always enjoyed watching, and I'm curious to see how Bob Bradley does. It just seemed like a ton of interest. Houston is suddenly looks, you know, very imposing. Albert Elise, their Honduran winger, I've always kind of been a fan of his. So yeah, it's great, and I think you're right. Like, the higher the level, the more meaningful the minutes are for young Americans. And you would think there'd be some correlation between the level of the league and sort of the expectations for these guys as they're coming up, like a sort of rising tide lifts all boats.
Oh, for sure.
That said, I had kind of some unpleasant thoughts watching some of our American teenagers who did get minutes. I didn't think, I don't know, did you get to see any of the FC Dallas Real Salt Lake game?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Did you get a chance to eyeball Reggie Cannon?
No, I wasn't paying any particular attention to any of it.
I mean, Cannon was playing right back. He's 19. I've been sort of interested in him because he's, you know, he's an American who's getting minutes. He didn't look to me. It's not a surprise you didn't notice him because he didn't do a ton, but he did get cut on the one goal of the game for Real Salt Lake by Joao Plata, and he just looked a little bit out of his depth. And I think I could sort of tick down the list, if it's not boring, of players who are young Americans who kind of were in that boat. I don't know.
No,
I mean, Marco Farfan at Portland. Same deal. I didn't think he looked particularly good. Chris Durkin came on for DC United. He's only 18. This was his professional debut or his MLS debut, and he wasn't on for very long. So it's not like a huge sample size, but again, he looked a little slow and not quite ready. I think he's gonna quickly get sharper. But I guess the overarching thing is I'm sort of less – maybe 3 months ago I would have been like, screw MLS. These coaches never play the young guys. And now I'm a little more like, maybe these young guys aren't really ready, and maybe we should just trust these coaches when they don't play these guys.
It can go that way, but it's the same thing. We were just like, the number of young kids has gotten so much higher that it's no longer just the case that, like, literally only the best 18-year-old in the country is playing professionally. We have a ton of them, so there's going to be more at sort of every point of the bell curve. We're going to have more sort of average players, who an average MLS player will definitely have moments where they look, you know, not great, where we are also going to have some players at the tail end, more players at the tail ends, where, you know, Weston McKennie's playing for Schalke, and Tyler Adams is a force to be reckoned with on New York. And so we just have to sort of, I still think it's a really good thing that we are playing, that more of these kids are playing, because again, it's the entire bell curve is just, we've just sort of increased the size of that pool.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So I'm all for it. And again, at 18, if a kid makes a couple mistakes, like, I can live with that. Like, that's, and I'm guessing most coaches are starting to think the same way. Yeah. And I assume most owners are starting to think the same way, because the upside will be so much greater for any of them that do come good.
Yeah. And then, you know, depth is a bit of an issue for MLS still, even with the new injection of money. You know, there's like a big drop off after the first 11 or 12, generally speaking. And if you can get one of these 17, 18, 19 year olds to be, get them enough minutes to get them like ready so they can be thrown in if they need to and keep their heads above water. It seems like that's a huge benefit to a team. I'd think. I was disappointed that Chris Goslin, just go back to the Atlanta game again, that Chris Goslin didn't earn his way onto the pitch. He didn't even earn his way into the 18, because Atlanta desperately needs a good holding midfielder. That was evident on Saturday.
Well, but they've done that. That's been evident all preseason, and they haven't moved for one. They haven't gone out shopping for one. So they feel like the guys they have can do it. I wonder how Tata will respond to the complete hole that was their central. Whether he'll have to, you know, go to somebody like Goslin, or whether he's going to have to find a new center back and move
Lorenowitz up to
Lorenowitz back into the mid. That kind of gives me some hope that he sees Goslin as a guy who can play there. Otherwise, I feel like they would have had to have tried to find somebody else to add to the roster.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe so.
Fingers crossed.
Anything, I got a couple positive notes from the youngsters on MLS weekend, but anything else you want to say about the weekend?
I thought the best American performance from the MLS was probably Greg Berhalter.
Yeah.
I know the a lot of these players now are sort of in the discussion for the national team as we turn the whole roster over, but there are quite a few coaches who are going to be sort of auditioning for the next 4 months for that position. So, I think Berhalter at this point merits some real consideration. I know, some of the other names that will always kind of be thrown in will be like a Peter Vermes or a Jesse Marsh, but Greg Berhalter is going to make Jazzy Zardes look like the best player in MLS. So
yeah, isn't that something? Yeah.
That's coaching. Like, that's where it's coaching. He's doing something so well that Zardes is going to win the Golden Boot. So I feel like that's a storyline that we can be following along as well.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, they beat the best team in MLS 2-0, and it was a breeze for them, as from what I gather. I didn't actually watch that game.
Oh, it wasn't. I mean, it was, I thought they had more chances. They looked better. I thought they looked better. And it's on the road, like, to go do that at Toronto. Like, you know, Toronto just beat the best Mexican team in Toronto. Like, it's not easy to go to Toronto and win a game. So,
right.
That's a statement from a coach. I mean, the players obviously are going to feel good about that, but I feel like that's a statement from Berhalter.
Yeah. Cause he lost Justin Miram, right? And he lost, and then also Ola Kamara.
Right.
and brought in Jazzy's artist. Yeah, very impressive. Very impressive. They play that. They play such a pleasant style of football too. I mean, the one downside of that is it sure seems like Jazzy's artist is gonna be with us for every men's national team camp from here on out if he's if he's banging in goals for Columbus.
We can get to that with our March preview.
Yeah.
I'm desperately hoping that our eventual technical director can sort out form from quality, form from ability.
Let's go back into the mixed bag of playing our kids, because there were a couple performances that were really good. I was really impressed with Justin Glad. I tweeted a bunch of GIFs from his performance against FC Dallas. He looks so quick and alert and reliable and comfortable with the ball at his feet, even at center back. He's 21 years old. He went to that men's national team camp in January, but didn't make the roster for that awful Bosnia game. I think he's, well, we can talk more about this with the March friendly discussion, but I was really impressed with him.
You know, you give those guys the chance so they can play, and now, you know, it seems like Justin Glad will be the nailed-on starter. You know, it would now be a surprise if at any point he loses his starting spot. So there's no reason to think that a 21-year-old can't actually be better than a 27-year-old, especially, again, at this stage with the Development Academy sort of being a recent trend. Like, it's possible that this current young generation, they'll sort of all be starting out ahead of what the older crop of players look like. So I feel like the teams that recognize that early on and capitalize on it will sort of be ahead of the competitive curve from coaches that are a little more conservative and like, oh, I got to stick with the guy who has experience. Like, yeah, experience can be good, but it doesn't have to take long for a better player to sort of win that battle, win that position.
Yeah. Yeah. And RSL's demonstrated that they're good at that. New York Red Bulls, FC Dallas.
Phil Union's going to play the kids, it looks like. So
yeah, that was the surprise to me. I'd never even heard of Anthony Fontana. You know, I keep pretty close tabs on this stuff. I'd never even heard of the kid. And he comes out, he's playing the 10, and they beat the New England Revolution 2-0. Now, the Revolution looked pretty terrible, but I was really impressed with Fontana. He's recently 18 too. He's not like about to turn 19. And he was clean on the half turn, real quick feet. Seemed like he was reliable in possession. I don't think he made a ton of incisive passes, but hit a cross that was on the money and he kicked a couple shots over the crossbar, and then he got the goal. He got the goal to open up the season for the Union. Did a crazy, crazy celebration, eating from the bowl and, I don't know, break dancing. It was like everything, trying to do everything all at once. But
see, we just need some of that energy.
Yeah.
So yeah, Philly's playing their kids. We've got plenty of kids who are playing it and playing it well. There's no reason to think that they all should. Just no reason to think that all of the 26-year-olds will be playing well. Like, you're going to have some that are good and some that are having a little bit off the day. So I just think it's a really promising, just a trend that goes hand in hand with a better product overall. Mm-hmm. And frankly, like a really exciting kind of soccer. So already looking forward to this weekend's game. Like, I'm just so glad to have it back.
Yeah, it is nice. It's particularly nice this time of year when it's not too hot. And everybody's fresh.
That Minneapolis gets?
Yeah, it's not hot here for sure. I think it's like 15 degrees outside right now. It's hell. Let's come back in a second and talk about the Paraguay friendly. Shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Why you make it so complicated? Off the drain, we concentrated. I know you won't leave me hanging. Smoking weed out the container. We spend cash for entertainment. There's more where that came from. That's all I'm saying. It's me and you. All right, we're back. We're not going to give our full 23-man roster that we'd like to see for this friendly. It's Paraguay on, is it the 28th, Greg? Something like that.
Double check.
Whatever. It's later this month. And we were going to, your idea, Greg, was to give names of people we definitely want in the roster and then names of people we definitely don't want in the roster. So we're going to go positive and then we're going to go negative. So why don't you give me somebody that you definitely want?
I definitely want to see Aaron Johansson, and I actually want to see him in the starting lineup. I want to see him playing underneath an act like a number nine. Like I'd be very excited to see that.
Kind of like a 4-2-3-1 with him sort of in the 10 spot.
Yeah, I think so. That's what I'm kind of envisioning.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I might just put him at the up top by himself, but I'd be so happy with you.
I'd be real cautious of that just because we were forced into something like that in Brazil in 2014 when Altuve went down, and we just could. I mean, there's a variety of things wrong with that situation, but he's not a huge threat. He's not like a work rate guy. Like I feel like he's just going to try to find little pockets. So I think pairing him with a striker, like even a Bobby Wood, I think would go a long way towards getting the most out of him that he can.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree completely. Arjo has to be on the roster. Let me, as an aside, say I don't know about you, but I have zero confidence that Dave Sarokin is going to do anything that I would like him to do.
No, I'm positive. Disappointed. That is the one thing I'm.
It's going to be like CJ Sapong, Juan Agudelo, and Jazzy Zardes as the three strikers. Well, my first the guy I want, I really want to get called up is Justin Glad. I mentioned him already. I think he's top. I think he's right there behind Miazga, Brooks, and Cameron in our right back, in our center back pool. It's hard to gauge the difference between like the championship and MLS, but I don't think those two leagues are that far apart, and I'm not even really sure which one is better. But Glad looks way better than CCV, and he's way more athletic than Tim Ream.
The difference in styles between the two leagues, you just need a completely different kind of player. At times,
it's brutal. The championship is brutal. I mean, I've watched probably like a dozen games this year, and admittedly, I'm watching mostly bottom of the table type stuff with Bolton and Ipswich Town. But I watched some Sheffield United. It's like it's just a lot of kicking the ball back and forth and heading the ball back and forth.
It is a lot of soccer tennis.
It's so much. It's really hard to watch. It's not. There's just not a lot of like composure.
I'm with you though. Glad's on my list. If John Brooks is out injured, Glad's the guy I'd like to see in the starting 11. Like I don't know why so much upside. He's 21. Like sort of find out if this can be your someone you can depend on for the next decade.
Yeah. Who's your next must have?
Well, if Glad falls on his face, like that's a good thing to learn too. Like there's nothing wrong with learning that somebody can't do it rather than just taking a safe route and being like, well, we're going to go with, you know, a 29-year-old Ike Opara and Matt Miazga. Like I feel like there's a value to seeing that somebody isn't there yet. My next guy that I'm really excited about because we haven't seen a lot of him in the national team and he's hard to sort of watch with his club is Kenny Saif.
Yeah.
I want to see if he can be a player, a slightly better or left-sided version of like a Paul Areola.
Yeah, totally agree. I think based on Sarokin's comments in an interview last week. It sounds like Saif is definitely getting the call too. I mean, it's gave every indication of that. How would you describe him as a player, Saif? I mean, based on, it is hard to watch those games, but based on what you've seen and know.
It seems like he's going to be kind of like a two-way wide player. So, you know, he's far less of a Pulisic type winger. And again, I almost want to say more like what a Graham Zuzi used to be, but on the left side. And it seems like his sort of specialty is left-footed service. From what, so that sort of makes me think of Graham Zuzi, who just was never super effective for the U.S. team. He was just kind of a placeholder, and you know, no one came and claimed that spot. So I'm hoping to see if, you know, that Saif could be a better version of that. That's my great hope.
Yeah, he's very technical. I mean, he has a sweet left foot, right? And the way he's described by Brian Shiretta and others is as like a real defensive workhorse, like a quite solid defender. So, I mean, that's a good combination. My next must call up is Anthony Robinson, the left back at Bolton. Still only 20 years old. He's helped lift that team you know, 4 or 5 points clear of the relegation zone after an absolutely disastrous start. He's got more assists than Christian Pulisic so far this season. and he's a good defender. He's got a little bit of forward momentum when he needs it. I'm not saying he's like my first choice left back in the whole pool, although that's not a super high bar, but
yeah, it's such a low threshold.
Yeah, I mean, he's not like head and shoulders above everybody else. But I want to see him in the camp. I want to get him integrated, and because I think there's a good chance he'll be competing for minutes at Everton next year. Then we'll have a Premier League left back on our hand. Best to have him capped, even though he's not cap tied, before England comes calling. That's my favorite.
I don't even know. I'm not super, like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he is head and shoulders above any of our other left backs. Like, do we, you know, in January it was Justin Morrow who, you know, was underwhelming. So it's not like we have a bunch of other choices there. So if he's even a little bit better than Viafania, like, all right, we suddenly have our new starting left back for, again, he's 20. Is he 20?
He's Robinson? 20. He's 20 on the nose. Yeah. Turns 21 in August. He's, I'd say, you know, he lacks a little bit of the seasoning that even a Morrow or a Viafania has, a little bit of savvy. But you know, that's going to come. And he's got all the athleticism in the world, and he used to be a winger, so he's got that shimmy. I think that's what Daryl Grove called it. He's got that shimmy, get by people. So maybe he is the best
roster. He's on the team. He's dressed for sure. Maybe in the 11.
Yeah, I'd be very happy if he was in the
11. The other guys I have are just kind of your standbys. Like and there'd be no reason they wouldn't be in it. Like Zach Steffen and Bill Hamid, Weston McKennie, I'm hoping is healthy and back to being able to play. Tyler Adams. Like after that, everyone else is just kind of in a giver. Yeah, if they're there, great. Like if it's CJ Sapong or if it's Dom Dwyer, not Dom Dwyer, but if it's CJ Sapong or if it's Juan Agudelo, like. I'm not going to be upset with any of those sort of harmless call-ups.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, then you got to make choices. And if you have Sapong and Agudelo, then you got to leave like one of Wood or Johansson home. And I'm going to say that I still want Bobby Wood called up.
Yeah, I want Bobby Wood there. I want Bobby Wood there.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he's been so awful lately, but
I still, that's our form versus quality. Like I just cannot believe that Bobby Wood has gotten worse at soccer. He's still the same player. He's in a terrible environment to look good.
Yeah.
Just like I don't think Gyasi Zardes has gotten any better at soccer just because he moved to Columbus. So let's go ahead and kick off the player. Do you have any other players that you want to see?
No, I mean, I for sure want McKennie there. I'm kind of ambivalent about a lot of the other guys. I'm not like, yeah. So let's start with
Rose on the team, great. You know, just fine.
Yeah, I'm a little more in the Kellen Rowe camp than that. I would like to see him there, but I'm not gonna light up my tiki torch if he's not called up. So let's start.
All right, then let's get
who do you not want there? Who do you not want there?
I mean, yeah, like Gyasi Zardes is sort of the perfect example. He didn't get better at soccer from the last time he was called. Like that just. He's the player he's going to be. He could win the Golden Boot with Columbus, but it won't be because he is suddenly international caliber. Like he'll be a system type guy. And I also want to stress this is because we're actually talking about human beings here. Like I love all of these guys. I love Zardes. I love that he has a ton of energy and it's fun. He seems to be like enjoying himself usually when he plays. Like I like all these guys. I just don't think all of them have a place on a national team that we're hoping can qualify for a World Cup in 4 years. So yeah, I don't see how Zardes, regardless of his scoring streak, is a guy that you're like, yes, he is now able to do it for the U.S. national team.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I guess we're in total agreement so far almost, but I feel like he's going to get called up regardless.
Will he start? Is he going to start? So this is, can my heart be broken twice? It's not a heartbreak. I just will watch and sort of shake my head slightly.
Yeah, it'll be disappointing. If he scores a brace this weekend? I don't know. It leaves Dave Sarakin no choice. He must start him in late March.
So if Zardes does get called up, when he inevitably gets called up because he's going to score three more goals between now and then for Columbus, Columbus is playing him as a nine, like every touch he takes is within 8 yards of the goal. Is Sarakin going to call him up because of that, but then throw him out on the wing while Bobby Wood starts up top? Like that's what blows my mind is
that
Zardes is best at isn't what we're going to ask him to do anyway. We're going to ask him to be a completely different player.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if he gets called up and then started on the wing, then the tiki torch is coming out.
So Zardes playing ahead of Johansson, we can do that.
I'd prefer he not be in the roster at all, but that'd be better than him on the wing.
All right, we'll go with that. We'll try to tell ourselves that would be a more acceptable.
I don't want to see Justin Morrow. I don't see any need for that. I mean, I'll just tick off a couple names because I don't need to say a ton about them. I don't want to see Justin Morrow. I don't want to see Walker Zimmerman. Lyndon Gooch also. He seems to be getting call-ups with some frequency. The kid seems like just like Zardes, seems like a great guy. And I love his work rate and his energy. But he can't even get with the first team for Sunderland, who is, I mean, they're the worst soccer team in the history of soccer. They're so bad. They're dead last in the championship, and they've been there basically since October, and they're not going anywhere. And he can't even get with the first team. I mean, maybe it has something to do with that. Like they're scrapping for wins, but they're not getting them, and he's not obviously a solution that the manager, their second or third manager of the season, sees as a viable solution. So I just want Lyndon to take a break for a little while.
A couple of my guys then would be like sort of all in the same category, and that's the over 28 and not already the best player at your position in the pool. So like a Bedoya or a Dax McCarty, and it even goes to like a Matt Beisler. Like there's just no real way in for them going forward. Like what role would they play? So I kind of don't want to see any sort of, I'm hoping not to see any of the eight of the, you know, elder statesmen from the national team's past, if this were a 3-week camp, I guess I could see it. You know, that you might want them to sort of be the role models, but for something where you're bringing a group together for like 3 days, like I just don't know if they have any real anything they can really add. Even like a Danny Williams, like I don't know if he's going to be somebody that a coach feels like they need at least one guy like that to hold the team together. Yeah. Or if you can just bring in a new group and set them loose.
Yeah, I feel really ambivalent about Williams. I think we might need him at the six because didn't Sarakin say he's not going to call up Bradley and Altidore? And
yeah, so that's the thing. We're kind of, you know, intentionally leaving those guys out completely, like the Cameron, Bradley, Altidore, Fabian Johnson. I'm kind of assuming that Darlington Nagbe, I don't think he named Nagbe, but I kind of assume Darlington Nagby's in that group.
Yeah, whereas I don't want to see Nagbe either.
I don't think Pulisic or Ariola are like left out. I think those guys will be in the call.
That's good. I mean, it's particularly in Pulisic's case. He needs a confidence boost. I don't know what's going on with their Europa League tie with Red Bull Salzburg, but he did not get the start for the fourth straight match. He's hit a rough patch there. And nothing like a game on home soil and a goal and an assist to get his engine back up to firing away.
There we go. So yeah, so I'd kind of like to see him put out wide opposite of like a Kenny Saif, where he's not asked to do everything. He's just asked to do what he's really good at.
Yeah.
Perfect. Run at people fast.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. And with McKennie, if McKennie's in the middle, and it sure seems like he came back from injury a lot sooner than I think most of us thought he would.
Mm.
It sure seems like he's going to be ready for that call up, and I really want to see him and Pulisic on the field together, and him dropping dimes down that right wing for him.
Yeah, I think that will do a lot for the morale of the U.S. fan base. Quite honestly, like. That's sort of something I feel like now everyone's sort of we're putting a lot of our optimism in those players and then the players who are going to be like those guys coming next.
Yep.
And anyone else you definitely don't want in this roster?
I mean, there's part of me that thinks Dave Sarakin's just going to try to troll me and still call up Jordan Morris, even though he has had a season-ending injury. No, I'm just kidding. That won't happen. Yeah, I don't think there's anybody else I don't want to see. You?
No. So who would be the a guy that you'd be really really surprised to see called up, but you'd be like, all right, this is actually kind of cool. Besides Andrew Carl.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen. I guess I should say one more I don't really want to see called up is Josh Sargent. I think.
Okay.
He got called up for the Portugal friendly and then got like a minor injury and couldn't dress for the game. But I don't want to see him called up until he, you know, starts banging in a few goals in the Bundesliga. Or, you know, if worse comes to worse and he gets loaned to two Bundesliga next year, then I want to see him banging in goals there before he gets a national team call up. And I feel like he may get called up. You know, he's got nothing else going on. He's just training. The U.S. soccer coaching tree loves him to death.
How about this? If he gets called, I'll be fine if he gets called up because what else is he doing? If he's on the game day roster, we'll be like, all right, this is a little bit much.
What if he's on the game day roster and then he gets in the game and he scores a goal?
So he'd be one of those guys where I'd be surprised to see him on the list, but I wouldn't really care because – you know, at that position, who's he keeping off? He's keeping off like a Sapong or a Christian Ramirez. Like, I'm not heavily invested in any of those guys. Like, we know what Bobby Wood is. Even if Bobby Wood gets left off the roster, we know where Bobby Wood stands. Like, there's not going to be. I don't think Bobby Wood's out of the picture.
Right.
So, you know, I wouldn't care about seeing a Sargent or like a Tim Weah. I wouldn't. The one I would really be kind of surprised at. But would actually really enjoy seeing would be a Tim Chandler.
Yeah. Yeah, that you know, everybody in the fan base, a lot of people in the fan base call for that. I'm kind of ambivalent on Chandler too, personally. What's your argument for him?
I don't know if I want to say he's gotten a bad rap. Like, he didn't look great, like, with the U.S., but he's currently, you know, the starting left back for a team that is in a Champions League slot in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
Our back situation has been a nightmare for a decade. Like, how do you not see if you can reconcile? Because I think it was an attitude thing. Like, I do think that his motivation for whatever reason for the U.S. national team wasn't there, whether it was a relationship with the manager or what. But I think you test it out and you've got to see, because he's not so old that he couldn't be doing the job through the next World Cup.
Yeah.
Given our dearth of choices there.
Yeah, no, that's true. I guess my one hesitation there is he's not really a left back. You know, he plays wing back very well, but he's a very attack minded wing back, and maybe the positions aren't that different. I don't know. Bring him on. Let's bring him on. I'm not interested in a Tim Weah call up either, for the same reason as Sargent. I don't think he's earned it. I mean, I know he got that debut with PSG, but I need to see a little more before I start banging for that.
Yeah, the Tim Weah debut was very similar, I think, to the Julian Green Bayern Munich debut, where, you know, there's an injury crisis. It's the PSG won the league, I think, mathematically, on like the third weekend of the season. At that point, like, you needed bodies. So it doesn't mean that Tim Weah can't eventually, but it doesn't mean there's no way to draw a conclusion from that. Either way, an incredible experience for a 17-year-old, I'm sure, but not something that I don't think that a national team coach could really draw any meaningful conclusions from his inclusion in that game.
Yeah, right. I think Cameron Carter-Vickers is probably earned another call-up. I know we're kind of skipping around here in our categories, but he's never going to be a transcendent center back. I think I've learned that watching enough of him, that he's just a defender. He's just a beefy guy who,
like, the old school U.S. men's net, like a Oguchi and Yewu, or even to an extent like an Omar Gonzalez.
Yep. Yeah.
Where he might be good enough, and he might get through a few games without being exposed, and, you know, that's not a terrible level to be at.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, at 20, he still has room to grow with, you know, in possession, which I think is really where he fails the most. So I'd like to see him again, especially if John Brooks is injured and Jeff Cameron isn't going to be there anyway.
Right. Yep. That'd be decent placeholder.
Any other thoughts on the roster? We should try to do our starting 11s the week of the game, because we'll be recording that week.
Yeah, once we know what the pool is, I'm sure we can put together a few dominant 11s.
Yeah, it'll be. I mean, Paraguay's pretty good. I guess Miguel Almirón will probably be in that game. It's just a little 5-hour drive from Atlanta to Raleigh. All right, well, let's wrap this up, man. You got anything else?
No, man. Let's save it all for next time.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Take care.